The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
The Holy Wisdom, which is his take on Jewish epistemology, which is the study of the nature and the authenticity of knowledge, which is referred to in the academic world as epistemology. The second volume is referred to as ontology, the study of the nature of being. And then the third volume is ethics. And those were the three basic concerns of philosophy, which is the nature of knowledge and its validity, the nature of all being, and the derivative or the implicit moral standards that one would derive from the way we picture the world. Okay, Rav Kook lived from the year 1865 to the year 1935. He lived only 70 years on planet Earth, and what's interesting about him is exactly half of his life was in the 19th century and half of his life was in the 20th century. And that seems to be a metaphor for the kind of person he was and what he provides the Jewish people as a great Torah sage. Because in that transition from the 19th century to the 20th century is a tremendous amount going on. You've got an explosion of the sciences and you've got an explosion of the philosophies and really the value, the reason why I find Rav Kook so necessary for our generation is because he responds to the unique kinds of questions that emerge in the beginnings of the 20th century, and we are children of the 20th century, and we're going to soon be the fathers of the 21st century. But in the meantime, we're the children of the 20th century, and the various kinds of questions and dilemmas and attitudes that emerged in that transition from the 19th to the 20th century, there were new problems, and Judaism needed to address those problems. That's one of the advantages of studying Rav Kook. You know, you could study the Bala Tanya, Rav Shneur Zalman Miliadi, who is the author of the Tanya, but he's going back, you know, much earlier, and therefore he's not going to exactly address our particular questions. He'll address some questions, of course, but not the unique contemporary questions of our times. And so the value of Rav Kook is he studied the Bala Tanya, and he studied all the great classics, and he is able to give us the Torah approach to the unique kinds of problems that were emerging in our century. Okay? All right. This piece here really addresses what is holy wisdom in contrast to secular wisdom. What's the difference between studying Torah and studying any other philosophy text? Studying Kant, or studying Hegel, or studying biology, or studying chemistry. I mean, what is really is there really a difference other than the issue that they address? And sometimes there is no apparent issue in terms of the various issues that are being addressed. I mean, Kant could be addressing an issue that Torah would be addressing. What would be the difference? Would the difference only simply be that we believe that Torah comes from God, so it's more accurate, and Kant is kind of guessing? Or is there a qualitative difference in the very essence of the kind of wisdom? And so this is called Chachmat HaKodesh HaPoelet, the holy wisdom that impacts. Poelet means is active. In other words, already we see here an indication that secular wisdom is not active. It doesn't transform you. It's something that you gain, it's something that you acquire, and it can give you guidance, but it doesn't transform you. What Rav Kook is telling us is from a Torah perspective, when a person studies Torah, they are getting a completely different quality of wisdom, a wisdom that is poelet, that is active and influential and transformative. Okay? Just learning Torah transforms you, is the basic point here. Chachmat HaKodesh, hi na'ale mikol chachma. The holy wisdom is loftier, on a much higher level than all other wisdom. Bezeh, in that, shehi ma'pechet et haratzon, it transforms the will, v'hatchuna hanafshit, and the spiritual character, shel lomdea, of the ones who study it. Lekarvam lo'oto haromimut, to bring them close to its own elevation, shiba atzma mitatzemet bo, to the elevation that it, the holy wisdom, has inherent in it. Very, very powerful statement and claim over here, that the holy wisdom is a wisdom that transforms your will and transforms your character. When you study the holy wisdom, by virtue of you simply studying that holy wisdom, it draws you, it elevates you to its own level. And you become holier because you are studying holy wisdom. Whether you take, it's not, we don't study the Torah only because it offers us instructions for living. That's very nice, but it's much more powerful than that. Because when I read the instructions of how I assemble my little, you know, model plane, well, so those instructions will tell me how to do it. But the fact that I'm reading those instructions doesn't transform me. It just gives me information and guides me how to do this. When I get the instructions for my, you know, my state-of-the-art new IBM computer, well, when I study those instructions, I'm not transformed by the instructions. I'm simply getting information that is useful. But what Torah claims as the very involvement of Torah, whether you get its content or not, whether its content is even relevant to you, whether there's any practical implications of what you're studying, the very involvement of the study of Torah transforms you. And why is that so? Because there's a basic idea in Jewish mysticism and Hasidut. And I quote from the Piazetzner Rebbe's, who was one of the great Hasidic masters who lived in the Warsaw Ghetto and became called the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto, the Piazetzner Rebbe. He says in the student's obligation, Chovas HaTalmidim, that when you understand something from the Torah, it's as if the intellect of God is now within you at that moment. When you study Torah and you get something, you get an understanding of Torah, then what you're actually doing is you're drawing Hashem's wisdom into your being. You know, I mean, okay, let's say I study some Kant. So I could say, well, maybe I'm bonding with Kant's mind at that moment. Yeah, but you know, who's Kant? But Judaism claims that when a person's involved in Torah, they're actually bonding with Hashem's mind, so to speak. Of course, Hashem has no mind. These are anthropomorphic, you know, metaphorical ways of speaking, but that's the way we speak. He also says that when a person becomes aroused towards Torah or towards doing mitzvahs, then the will that's driving you is no longer yours. It's now God's will inside you. I mean, this is very lofty claims that Judaism has, that when a person begins to have a desire for a mitzvah, his will transforms and becomes a holy will. It becomes a godly will, and because you've just plugged into a higher will. Rav Kook says later on that all ideas ultimately come from God. The problem is that what makes some ideas wrong is that they are a very narrow slice of God's wisdom, and thereby various distortions arise from it. So the idea in essence, all ideas in essence are good, but since most ideas have been divorced from the greater context, then what happens is they become distorted and misunderstood. So, you know, Kant, we could find truth in Kant. Where his mistakes would derive would be that somehow he's only got a piece of the picture and not the whole picture. When a person studies Torah, they're actually plugging into the whole picture. Okay? In the most direct way. And so there is value. I'm not saying there isn't value in secular thought. But secular thought, as he's soon going to say, is not a dynamic thought. It's not an active, influential, transformative thought. It's just an idea that you'll get, and it could be helpful if you use it. But here Judaism is saying that it's not just a question of the Torah's information being useful. It's just the very quality of the idea, and the fact that you now have that idea in your head is already transforming you. Yeah, already transforming you. And because you are plugging into, when a person studies Torah, they're actually plugging into a socket. you know, a divine socket. You have to almost picture yourself as a, you know, whatever, a toaster, right? You're plugging your mind into the, it's like Israelite used to have a computer which also doubled as a laptop. So you could actually pull the laptop out of the computer and then use the laptop, and then you could put the laptop back into whatever they called it. The stall, and the computer would naturally just absorb all the information, also be able to draw from the greater information of the computer. So too, you have to imagine, so to speak, that when you're studying Torah, you're not simply reading interesting ideas and getting, you know, and gaining some great, you know, guidance. You're actually plugging your mind, so to speak, into the mind of God. When you're doing a mitzvah, you're actually plugging your will into the will of God, and therefore it transforms you. That's the claim, right? That's the claim. Now, my question here is, but how come I don't see it work? Right? I mean, I have seen it work, but on the other hand, I've seen people learn Torah and be jerks like they were before. You know, what made the difference? I think the answer is the basic concept that a person who learns the Torah not for its proper sake, it becomes poison. But when a person learns Torah for its appropriate sake, then it becomes an elixir of life. In other words, my whole attitude towards the Torah can determine whether I'm actually plugging into it and getting the juice, or whether I'm only getting the externality of it and I haven't really plugged my neshama into it. People who have actually plugged their neshama into it are transformed by Torah. You know, they are transformed by Torah. So therefore, he's telling us that, and this is common in Hasidut, that when we study Torah, we are actually drawing the wisdom of Hashem into our minds, and it thereby transforms us, elevates us, and turns us into the same quality of holiness. Okay? Masha'en ken kol ha'chachmat ha'olamiyot. That is not true about all the other universal wisdoms. Afal pi she'en mitzayrot inyanim niskavim, even though they do describe very lofty issues, yafim va'atzilim, very noble and beautiful ideas. It's not like he's definitely saying that you can have secular wisdom or the wisdoms of the world that do describe very lofty ideas. Ein lam oto atchuna ha'mif'alit. But these ideas do not have the same quality of transformational power. Not that you can't gain. You can get the wisdom, and if you apply that wisdom, it could help you and it could transform you. But the wisdom itself does not transform you. Okay? Whereby Judaism claims that the involvement in Torah, just the involvement itself, already transforms you. Universal wisdoms, or the secular wisdoms, they do not have the power to draw you to the level of their own value. They have great value. He's not saying they don't have great value, but they don't have the potential to draw you to their value. Right? They can give you ideas and they can guide you, but they cannot transform you by virtue of simply learning them. And not only that, but secular wisdom does not in any way relate to the totality of all your powers. It only relates to your intellect. Now, there's when a person's studying philosophy, so, you know, it's not going to transform you, but it's going to give you great ideas, and based on those great ideas, you might make good choices, for sure. But A, it's not going to transform your intellect. It's going to enrich it, but it's not going to transform it and make it holy. And B, it's not going to transform you. Judaism claims that when a person's involved in Torah, then you get much more out of it than what's in it, what's apparently in it. That's why it says in Perkei Avot, Kolam Lomid Torah, all who study Torah, Zochi Laharbe Dvarim, you merit many things. What does it mean, you merit many things? What are the many things? You get more than you bargained from, just because you were plugging into God. You're plugging into the source of life, you're plugging into the source of blessing, then it has transformative impact on your entire life. your business, your relationship with your wife, everything changes because you're plugging into the source of all wisdom. You're plugging into the source of all life. And the Torah claims that that's what Torah can do for you. So other wisdoms, A, can only describe great ideas, and you can get great ideas from it, but it does not have this transformative impact upon you by virtue of you simply learning them. And it also doesn't have the and it might impact your mind in that your mind gets good ideas, but it doesn't transform your mind, nor does it transform your entire being. Judaism claims that when a person studies Torah, whether it's Gemara, whether it's Chumash, whether it's Kabbalah, you are actually plugging into a wellspring of consciousness. You're actually plugging into the source of life, and it transforms you. You know, there's a famous story about Bertrand Russell, who was a philosopher, wrote a number of books, and he was giving a course on ethics in one of the colleges in England. And one day, in the middle of his lecture, a student got up and she said, "How can you teach and say these things when you went to bed with me last night?" Well, at that point, it caused a great ruckus in the class. And then another woman got up and said, "I can't believe it. You said I was the only one." And before they knew it, it turns out that Bertrand Russell, this professor of ethics, was sleeping with his students. So he was called into the dean's office, and the dean confronted him and said, "Bertrand, how could you behave this way? How can you be teaching ethics in our college and be acting this way?" And Bertrand Russell said, "I ask you, do you expect your math professor to be a mathematical equation? Do you expect your chemistry professor to be a chemical formula? Why do you expect your ethics professor to be ethical?" See, that's the difference. When we talk about a Torah scholar, that means not a person who has great Torah wisdom. It means a person who is plugged into Torah and therefore embodies Torah in every fiber of their being. The way they talk, the way they eat, the way they sleep, the way they act, the way they relate to people. That is truly a Torah scholar. In the Greek world, you could be a scholar but a scum. But that doesn't interfere with the fact that you're a scholar. You could be revered and respected as a great philosopher even though you're a lousy person. In Judaism, if you learn Torah and you continue to be a lousy person, you haven't learned any Torah yet. That's the famous story about a fellow who came to a rabbi and said to him, "Rabbi, I've gone through all of Shas. I've gone through the entire Talmud." The rabbi then said to him, "Well, that's very nice, but how much of the Talmud has gone through you?" It is possible that a person can study Torah on a very superficial level, only drawing from it ideas, but not plugging into it, and ultimately bonding with the wisdom of God and becoming transformed and elevated by that wisdom. If it doesn't elevate you, you're just not learning Torah. It's just reading a book. Well, you've got to plug in. I mean, you know, you could look all day long at the electrical socket, but you've got to plug your toaster in. And so to here, a person could look all day long and they could read the Torah and they could have interesting discussions, but they have to have the kavana and the openness. I want to plug myself into Hashem's wisdom. I want to plug myself into Hashem's will. I'm willing and ready to do that. And that's what my intentions are for learning Torah. I want to come to the level of holiness that this Torah embodies. Well, action would be the acid test of if that's really true. But, you know, what comes first, the action or the learning? I mean, like, we learn in order to do, and we do in order to prepare ourselves to learn. I mean, there's definitely a circuit going on over here. But I think a person has to make sure and check themselves in terms of what is motivating to study Torah. I mean, I've seen people in yeshiva study Torah like a person who would study anything in university. I mean, it's in the university you get, you know, tremendous admiration for the fact that you've been able to accomplish a PhD. And I've seen people in the Torah world where they study Torah because Torah gives them a certain acknowledgement and admiration that they earn from the community. That's not why you should be studying Torah, right? It's not to show off how many pages of Gemara you know, and it's not for that purpose at all. It's for the purpose of really becoming a sanctuary for these ideas. And if a person puts that in their heads, then it will begin to work upon them. But if a person puts that into their heads with any other wisdom, it's not going to change them. You could study biology all you want. It's not going to transform you. You'll get some great ideas. You'll become a great doctor, but you won't become a great person. But when a person studies Torah, if they're still a rotten guy, they haven't studied Torah. Doesn't matter how much Torah they can quote. They have to understand that true studying of Torah is to really plug into the text. It's really to plug into it. And that has to be my intention at the very least, and my prayer. You know, that the Torah transform me, because it can transform me. I can pray all I want that reading Great Gatsby will transform me, but it won't transform me, according to Judaism. But Judaism claims that Torah will transform you, and you will get more than wisdom out of it. It won't only transform your wisdom, it will transform your entire being. You will zoche laharbe dvarim. You will merit many things, things that seem to have nothing to do with Torah, are in the merit of the fact that you have been studying Torah, because you have plugged into the source of life and the source of blessing by virtue of this involvement. You know, Rav Kook says in another place that we have to make things into Torah. You know, once upon a time, we could get it all from Torah. You know, it says, chew it up, it's brekevot, you know, chew it up, chew it up. Everything's in the Torah. And we actually believe that everything is in the Torah. You could get science in the Torah. You could get it all. Why not from the five books of Moses? But the fact that you plug into the wisdom of Shem, you plug into the source of all wisdom. Right? So you can get it all. But the truth is that we're not on that level, or most of us are not on that level. They do say, for instance, you know, the Vilna Gaon wrote a book on mathematics when he went to the bathroom. You know, that was the only time he'd give it any time, is when he's in the bathroom. And he wrote volumes of books on mathematics, you know. But that was still by virtue of the fact that he was into Torah. And he had plugged into Hashem's wisdom. If we take secular ideas and we put them and we make them into part of helping us understand Torah, or putting it within the context of Torah, then I do believe that those ideas start to plug into the tree of life, and they too can become a channel, but they still won't be on the same level of the direct level of Torah. But I'm not saying that there aren't holy sparks in everything. Of course there are holy sparks in everything, because ultimately, who is the source of all wisdom if not God? And all wisdom that man gets is only wisdom he's ultimately received from the source of wisdom, which is what we call God. But nonetheless, Torah is a much more direct connection, accurate connection. You know, it's like the broadcasting station. I mean, you might have little transistors out there that are picking up something from Torah. And you read stuff that you say, wow, this is such Torah in this stuff. I mean, like, you know, I've read secular philosophers and I say, this amazing Torah in here. And there is, because it's really ultimately all Torah. But some is not distorted and directly connected, and some is still nonetheless disconnected. So you're right, there is value. I don't want to come away thinking there is no value in secular thought. He's not saying that. But it doesn't have the transformative effect. If I put it as part of the context of Torah, perhaps my guess is that it could begin to have a more transformative effect, because it would be linked to the transformer called Torah. But still, it can't take the place of really being actively involved in Torah, you know, in a regular way that we're learning Torah. Okay, let's go on. V'tama devar hu. Now, the reason why the Torah is so transformative. Because all issues of holiness, matters of holiness, comes from the source of all life. Right? Comes from the source of all life. And therefore, it has embodied in it the power of life. Now, he's saying something here really very heavy. Because implicit in what he's saying here, you know, philosophers, scientists have always tried to figure out what is the thing in itself? Like, what is essence? You know, what are we all made of? What is, you know, is in Kant's terminology, the thing in itself? Rav Kook is telling us that really Kodesh, holiness, is the thing in itself. If a person would ask himself, well, what is holy? Like, what does holy taste like? First of all, you can't quite describe holy because it's a taste, just like you can't describe chocolate cake. That's why, you know, I think the reason why we do Kiddush on wine is to remind ourselves that holiness is something that you can only know through tasting. But essentially, holiness is completeness. It is what is real. It is that which is totally real. It's not simply our comprehension of what's real. It's that which is totally real. And therefore, when a person plugs into Kedusha, when they live a life of holiness, they are really in touch with that which is completely real. And so when we're involved with matters of holiness, the reason why they're transformative is because they are coming from the source of all life. They are light. They are, so to speak, rays of light. They are streams of the holy essence, whatever we call it. In other words, these holy matters are coming from the source of life, which is the foundation of life, which brings everything into being. In other words, the wisdom that I'm plugging into through the Torah is the wisdom that God creates the world with. Okay? Because, you know, the world was created with this substance called wisdom. If we were to, you know, boil it all down, if we were to distill the world, it's like, you know, if you walk into a candy store, so you look at all these different shapes and colors, but the truth is, it's all candy, right? It's all sugar. Okay? It all looks like different, but it's all sugar. So when we look at the world and all the various shapes and densities and qualities of the world, if you were to boil it and distill it all down, it's all wisdom. Okay? It's all consciousness. And everything is born out of consciousness and made by consciousness. Born out of consciousness. The last point that Rav Kook says is this. Why is this wisdom transformative? Because this wisdom is the very wisdom that God creates the world. In other words, when it says that God looked in the Torah and created the world, what metaphorically is it telling us? It's telling us that the Torah's wisdom is a creative wisdom. That you are plugging into the very wisdom that creates. You're not plugging into wisdom that merely describes. You're plugging into wisdom that actually creates. And therefore, when a person studies Torah, not only does it recreate them and have such an impact, but the knowledge that they're gaining is one that makes them creative. Not only creative in that they come up with creative ideas, but they have a power. They plug into a power that creates events around them. You know, that's why they say that Moshe Rabbeinu, it was in the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu that the Jewish people had manna. And it was in the merit of Aaron that the Jewish people had those clouds that were enveloping the Jewish people the whole 40 years. And it was in the merit of Miriam that they had this well. These people were channels. They became so plugged into Hashem that they became channels to actually create this phenomena in the world. And it might bring us to the idea of Rav Chanina ben Dusa, who was very poor, and his daughter went to buy candles, went to buy oil to light Shabbos candles, and she had made a mistake, and she had bought a bottle of vinegar. She didn't realize this mistake until it was minutes before Shabbat, and the store was closed, and she realized as she was about to light the candles that this is vinegar and they won't light. Her father walked in and saw her crying and said, "Why are you crying?" And she said, "Because I bought vinegar and I have now no oil for Shabbos candles." And at that point, her father said, "Oh, don't cry, no problem. The one who says, 'Let oil light,' shall say, 'Let vinegar light.' Light the candles, my love." And she lit the candles. In other words, he is so plugged into the wisdom of God that he actually became a channel to create this vinegar and turn it into something that was flammable. Is that powerful? So Judaism claims the power of the wisdom of Torah, because you're not simply gaining interesting ideas. You're actually tapping into the very wisdom that God creates the world with. And you, by tapping into that, are empowered to be not only recreated by virtue of this wisdom, but you too become a creator of your situation. I mean, you are given amazing power through this. So kol hakavod, and we should only ascend from power to power and merit to be humble servants to Klal Yisrael and Hashem.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.